look at the particular proposal and figure out whether it was a rational one and whether we could operate it in some way that made some sense. So, it takes an actual proposal
Mike,
to figure out whether it makes sense.
Mike, you sound so reasonable. You know, that's you always sounded that way. You have this line of patter, which is so reasonable. But, you know, again, ignores the basic issues, that the city did wink at this matter. There wasn't raw sewage all over. There was one damaged porta-potty, which the Citizens Committee for the Homeless had not repaired for 2 months, and which they gleefully showed the media as a great excuse to close down the campground in violation of the agreement. I mean, they could have sat down with the campers and talked about the situation as they promised. Let me play you the actual agreement in the words of, I believe it's Daryl Darling, what the campground agreement was between SOS, Save Our Shelter, and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, as represented by Paul Meursault and Daryl Darling. And here it is.
They will.
Here we are.
The board, I'm confident,
this is Daryl Darling
support
speaking.
What we're suggesting, which is what you just said.
And people can
January 1st, no
people
sooner
can come
than
to this board meeting, Daryl, at 4 o'clock tomorrow if they'd like.
Sure.
I'm
sorry.
No sooner than January 1st will we be moving. We'll review together as the weather unfolds, and beyond January 1st, no sooner than 10 days after permits are released.
You have our word on that.
Yeah, you have our word on that. That enrages me, Mike.
Six or nine spots, you can go there. But that in no way, just like, busing 43 or 47 or 49 lucky campers to New Brighton Beach, in no way has any impact on what happens to the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of other homeless people. And we've been, pressing for some kind of reasonable modification of this for years. And again, the only changes we've gotten were the stiffening of the camping ban in 1989 when we won a court decision and the city council hustled into emergency session to change things. And then finally this summer, when I believe when Mike voting with the majority, he did allow for a minor reform around that law, which again, in no way impacts the majority of people. We're looking for something to impact the majority of people. Now, since this is my show, I'm going to start dictating what happens next because we haven't got too much time left. Is there another point you want to make?
I just think the big issue is the camping ban because, we don't want another little shelter place over here. We don't want to be in concentration camps. We just want to be able to sleep and just live,
I've said
we have
that
a right to exist. Okay, thank you.
No, thank you. All right.
You will, Mike, but what I want to do now is I want to give Dan, who hasn't had really a chance to talk at all, a chance to say a word or two. And then I want to ask Celine to deal with the first question on her list, which has to do with the issue we were discussing earlier, Mike, which was the issue of the January 1st closing. I'm going to take one more phone call, then we're going to have Dan have a seat. Dan's been studiously writing notes throughout the entire show. Dan Hopkins, who I call Dragon's Heart Dan, has been an organizer for Save Our Shelter and has been listening to Mike carefully, copiously taking notes. I think we have, looks like our caller has stopped calling. Okay, well, phone line is 427-3772. We're going to limit you to a short comments because we're really trying to fill this last 20 minutes. And we are going to give Mike Rotkin a chance to respond after we've dumped on him a bit here.
Okay, am I talking loud enough on that?
Yes, you are.
Okay. All right, I'm Dan Hopkins, and I'm a member of Save Our Shelters Committee. And one of the things that I did want to clarify, or so people would understand what this is a lot of the campers have said that Robert doesn't represent them. And I must tell you that the reason that has come up, because I've asked them and listened to them, is because he is not a homeless person himself. And I stated many times over and over again to my friends out there and other people in the city that you do not have to be a homeless person to care about homeless people. And another thing that is very interesting about this is Robert is actually a member of the Save Our Shelters Committee. And I think it's very unfair that everybody has rebuked him in that way. But anyway, that's just a minor point I wanted to bring out.
I didn't pay him to say this, believe it or not.
No. Okay.
So what you're saying is that the homeless people are saying that Robert doesn't represent them, and you're trying to say to them they're being unreasonable, that they should understand that he does represent them even though he's not homeless.
Right. Right. He doesn't have to be homeless to care. I mean, hey.
I don't represent anybody, but I hope I don't misrepresent anybody.
Okay. Before I ever became a homeless person, I would go into the community, especially on holidays, and it didn't have to be a holiday, but on holidays, and I would go and find a homeless person, and I would take him to a restaurant, give him the best meal he could possibly eat, and pay for the whole thing and everything with no comments, no trying to preach to anything to him or anything. You know. Yeah, so
I warn you, we are time limited.
Okay.
Here, so
okay.
Got
right. I have to get to my points.
On.
Yeah. Okay. I
got
to get to my points. Okay.
One
of the things I like to say about the sleeping ban, first off, is that the first day in Santa Cruz that I was here, the very first 45 minutes I was here, I went and bought a pretzel at the hot dog stand over in front of Woolworths. And when I got there, I said, oh, this is really nice. I really like this town because it's open and everything. So anyway, I sat down in front of Woolworths, and I said I was going to enjoy my pretzel. Before I even took the first bite, one of these so-called community hosts in the green shirts came over and told me I could not sit there, that I had to go 10 feet beyond the store and out towards the sidewalk or on a bench. And so I don't know if that law has been changed or not. But anyway,
no.
I want to get, that was in the first 45 minutes I was in Santa Cruz. The second thing is about the health hazard that was out at the Coral Street shelter, which presumably caused it to be closed down. Is first off, I'd like to tell you how that happened. Is very quickly, I know we only have a few minutes. Okay, that the porta potty was a disabled porta potty, and the water was running down off the hill from the dinette area, flooded the bathroom, and those toilets are self-contained. They did not overflow. There was no urine on the ground. There was also a pipe that was broken on the urinal, which everybody knew about, and I doubt that anybody was using, because they know it would go right on their shoes if they used it. And so there was no water running down the hill. It was water running out off the hill into the urinal on the floor only, because it was a disabled porta-potty, which is at the level of the ground so wheelchairs can get in. And I know I'm going to have to talk real fast, but I do have to get these points out. They're really important. This part of the thing about the pipe being broken on the urinal has been there for 3 months since I've been there, and no one did anything until this point. So is this mismanagement? I think they didn't even care because they didn't even know about it. And then, I hate to go so fast, but I'm going to have to go fast. Can't Santa Cruz be different? Can't we change some laws? Can't we try to do the human thing towards people, you know? And another thing that's really, one of the other subjects that was talked about was Hippie Corner there is what it's called. One day I went there, and on many occasions, but this one particular day, two policemen were standing on the corner for 2 hours straight, and then a third policeman came over there watching these people who were hugging each other, sitting down there making their little crafts and things, playing a little guitar or a little drum or whatever, and they had to be there. Is the police department overstaffed or what? And I see this all over the place down there, and where they're just standing there, like somebody's doing something wrong all the time. And then the priorities of one council meeting was it was going to cost $20,000 per parking place to change this unattractive parking lot, or what was viewed as an unattractive parking lot. And from what I understood the person to say, that it was a $280,000 venture. And I'm wondering where the priorities and where the tax money is going, you know. And I have something I have to read that I'll be done right now. Just take a second. Okay, I read about 2 minutes to read. Okay, I think that the sleeping ban should be changed because of the fear that's put inside of a person when they're sleeping at night. They can't even really sleep. They're going to be about half asleep. And I think that's very unreasonable. It's denying a person sleep anywhere after 11 p.m. And police aggressively look for homeless people camping in the woods and give a $168 ticket. Then the chances are the homeless person will not be able to pay the fine. That means a warrant will be out for the person, and if arrested, will lose his only home, a tent, plus all of his belongings. This law needs to be modified or changed, or at least designate a piece of property no one is using. We already have two people who will pay for porta potties. Then all we need, that's all we need. We can do just fine if you only have a legal place to go.
To have Mayor Mike Rotkin, and he is still with us, as well as Celine Pascal. That was Dan Hopkins you were listening to, a camper with the New Brighton Beach, previously with the Open Air Shelter, before it was closed in violation of a verbal contract between the campers and the property owners, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, as they call themselves. Now, Celine here is, and we devised, I think, a list of questions I saw over there, Celine, and the top of that list says, what happens after January 1st? I think that's a question which a lot of people, not just those of us in this room and campers out at the campground, people in the community, but people in the surrounding communities are wondering about. Do you want to say anything about that, Celine, before we turn the mic over to Mike?
No.
Go for it, Mike. What's going to happen on January 1st when both for the 43 campers at, or 47 campers at Brighton Beach and then, in my mind, the hundreds of other homeless people who are outside without legal place to sleep? I'm not asking you to provide social services. I'm asking you, can anything be done to remedy that status, let's say, under the emergency statute that you passed, not in the emergency, shelter emergency, I believe it was called, as distinguished from a state of emergency passed at the end of November. Are you willing to consider changes that might result in a change in people's illegal status?
Okay, I'm going to respond to a couple points that were raised. Trying to do this. How long should I take?
Can you address that point first and then go into the other point? I know you've got...
Actually, it'd be better if I do in the other order, but 3 minutes, okay? 2 minutes?
Take 3 minutes, but go ahead. Take 3 minutes.
I won't take longer. First, I have to say, Dan's comments, I think, reinforce some of the points that I was trying to make. The first is, you know, he had the horrible experience of being asked to move 10 feet. He wasn't told to get out of town or don't sit anywhere in Santa Cruz or go someplace else, which is what you would find in most communities in California if you tried sitting down on the sidewalk to eat your pretzel. He was told he had to move 10 feet. I don't think that that's major social oppression. Sorry. And the reason he was being asked to move is because it is difficult for people to move down the sidewalks outside that little pretzel stand that's out there if people sit right next to it. So I don't think that, you know, I think that's a classic example of the sort of horrible oppression that people are being asked to deal with, which is being asked to move over, not driven out of town. Secondly, about the conditions of the campground, people may continue to differ about this. I don't argue with Dan about any of his things about why there, were sewage problems out there on the property. The issue that there may have been irresponsible management or whatever, I have no idea what caused it. All I know is what the conditions were when I went out there after the storm that took place last two Tuesdays ago now. And the conditions were not safe, were not sanitary, and not reasonable. And we put people in, and the only people we were only asking there, the campers themselves, not Robert who wanted more, or not a number of other advocates for the homeless, but the homeless campers themselves were saying they wanted someplace to stay till January 1st, until they could fix their cars or get their social security checks on the 1st or whatever. And we provided that for people, and they're going to be able to stay at a much nicer place, which Robert already would agree to, for a short period of time. We don't have a solution for anybody after January 1st. I've said that over and over again. We do not provide places for people to stay in Santa Cruz who are not willing to go into the existing shelters or take advantage of the existing programs. In terms of the camping ban itself, as I said, when I first started working on this issue, the general attitude of the people in the city of Santa Cruz was that we should be driving people out of town at the end of a nightstick. There was basically a very hostile attitude towards the homeless. When I first got to Santa Cruz in 1969, they were already talking about the Utes, which was short for UTE, undesirable transient element. I didn't even know what they were talking about. I've spent years in this town, as have other people, trying to make a difference, changing popular opinion, getting to the point where people accept the notion that looking different is not a reason to be driven out of town or be abused by the police, that it's not a reason to not be allowed to participate in this community, even receive certain kinds of services. But the people in this community are simply, and I know this because I go out and knock on doors and talk to people. I don't sit around just talking to other leftists or other people that share my worldview, that the vast majority of people in this town do not support the idea of people being allowed to sleep on the streets in their cars or in... camp in alleyways or commercial areas, as Robert said, or any of the other kinds of places, that people think that that's a bad idea. We do not yet have anything like a popular opinion in this town that says those are things that people should be allowed to do as some kind of a God-given right or a socially given right. And at this point, I think we've made tremendous advances in terms of what goes on in popular opinion, consciousness. We've begun to try and provide services for people that meet their needs, but I don't want anybody to have the illusion that somehow I've ever made the promise or that the city government has somehow ever made the promise that Santa Cruz is going to be a place where everybody who would like to simply hang out, be allowed to live off the land, quote-unquote, according to our caller, or anything. Let me finish my three things, that anybody has somehow these natural rights. Now, among the homeless, probably 80% of the people that are homeless, these numbers are subject to argument, but something like 80% of the people that are homeless are in need of some kind of social services, in need of some kind of support from people. They either need job training because they can't get work given the skills they've got. They would like to have job training or like to have a decent job. Or they've got a drug problem or an alcohol problem and like to deal with it. Or there's a mental health problem of some kind and they need some kind of counseling and support. Roughly 20% of the homeless people that are out there basically have this attitude of they should just be allowed to travel where they want, do what they want, live where they want to, and nobody should bother them. The people in the city of Santa Cruz, I think, are uncommonly sympathetic to the 80% and very unsympathetic to the other 20%. That puts us, in terms of popular consciousness, way ahead of most communities in the United States. But I'm not going to make some representation that the people in this town are prepared to say, well, look, if you don't want to get a job and you want to just hang out and kind of live off the land and live off of begging money from other people, that somehow we're going to provide that opportunity in this town. I don't think that people are willing to do that. And finally, the city council, I think, has a responsibility to do education with people, to not just blindly follow where the votes go or something. I don't think we do that. But you can only go so far ahead of where people are at in terms of popular consciousness. Somebody needs to do an awful lot more education, not just city council members, but other people, about these kinds of issues. And you don't get at this by saying to people, well, look, we're going to create a situation where people will just be allowed to camp where they want. Because I think that will create such a huge backlash in this town. I'm still within my 3 minutes, Robert. That will create such a huge backlash in this town that we will lose the popular support that we have built for some kinds of homeless services. And so, for me, the question is, how can we advance where people are at about the homeless issue, try and do education about things, and have people stop blaming the homeless for every stolen Christmas tree, if that was the example we had, or every problem, or think that every... As the people of Aptos, or many people, not all people, many people in Aptos seem to think that, you know, every homeless person is a likely child molester or something, which is outrageous because, you know, homeless people are no more likely to be child molesters than anybody else, probably less likely. And no, I got 30 seconds here. Well, I can take 10. And I just think that it's at this point, people have no sense of the political reality of what it would take to try and implement the kinds of programs that they're talking about. And the city council cannot impose on the people of the city of Santa Cruz. We do have a democracy, you know. We cannot impose on the citizens in this town our personal visions of whether people should be allowed to sleep or not sleep in some public space. That's a political education process that I wish people had more long-term perspectives about and more willingness to do education about. We're a long ways away from being at that point in this town.
I think you can lead. I'm going to let Celine respond, of course. I think she's got some things to say about, a number of things. But the county has a roadside resting law that makes it legal to pull over and sleep if you need to just go to sleep in order to avoid an accident. Just as a test, Mike, since it seems that neither of us has changed in the last 8 years, would you be willing to support a roadside resting law in Santa Cruz?
I'm not sure.
The roadside resting law states that if you pull over for a few hours to sleep at night, you won't be arrested or cited for that.
Well, Robert, this is completely disingenuous. I mean, either you're supporting the idea that people literally driving between point A and point B need a place to pull over, or you're suggesting that we're going to like play some game here in which we're going to allow people to use some law like this to sleep in people's neighborhoods.
No, I'm asking you if you will support a roadside resting law for Santa Cruz. The county support ones. Will the city support one? Would you support one?
I don't believe that the Santa Cruz City Police are actually citing or arresting anybody that's on their way to some place in a car between point A and point B for stopping by the road rather than having a wreck. I just think it's bullshit to represent that that's what's going on.
So the answer is no.
What they're doing is telling, the answer is absolutely no. Because what you're trying to do is say that we're going to play some schemes, some subterfuge in which we're going to use one law, which is not an honest one, to allow people to sleep in their cars.
I've been at this
Be straightforward
for a
about
I've been,
it.
I'm being quite straightforward. I'm looking to see if even the smallest concession what might possibly move you from what I regard as a completely entrenched position. You know, when I invited you here, I had no illusions that I could possibly change your mind about any of these issues. I'm sure I couldn't. My objective, of course, was to have you present your views to the public so they can see and decide for themselves how compassionate and reasonable they are and whether your representations to the media as Mr. Compassion out of Santa Cruz here actually is an accurate one. And I perhaps today we can see some of that, although, again, it's really hard to pierce the rhetoric. Celine, you want to go ahead and talk?
Can I start with just one question for you? The people who were camping down at Coral Street got bussed out to New Brighton, and many of them have pets and are not going to be able to get on buses because they have pets. And I was wondering if the city the city bussed them out, is the city going to bus them back in?
On January 1st, you're saying?
Yeah. Once you bust them out, provided camping, and then does the city bring them back in? Because without the city doing that, they're not going to be able to get back in unless they walk with their dogs.
Well, yeah, I'm sure the city is not going to leave them out there in the middle of nowhere if people need a way to get back into town. I mean, this is not, you know, from the very beginning, we tried to make clear this was particularly the citizens in Aptos that are inappropriately, some of whom are inappropriately freaking out about their new neighbors, that, you know, this is not an attempt to dump these people in some other town and have them all go away or something. That's why we provided the bus passes, and I'm sure the city will be happy to cooperate with making sure anybody that wants to get back in town can do so. But we don't want to create some illusion that we have some new program that they're going to be able to go into outdoors after January 1st. So, no, we're not attempting to try to leave them in Aptos or something.
Okay, so you'll be bringing them back.
If that's necessary. I also want to say the bus drivers have been uncommonly supportive here and actually been letting people take their dogs on the bus. And we have an ordinance for the transit district. I'm also on that board that allows people to use helping dogs, they're called. And I think the bus drivers are having a fairly generous interpretation of what a helping dog is, and some of these folks are getting into town with their pets.
Okay. A couple of points that you made that I'd really like to address were that, you know, you kind of chided Dan that he had suffered the social oppression of having to move 10 feet to eat his pretzel, which I thought was kind of an unfair thing to do, since what we're really talking about is social relativity, and that the host program is probably the most disingenuous thing that the city has done regarding homelessness. And the tourist agency, the authentic Santa Cruz Tourist Bureau that's over on Front Street, has had a lot of conflict with the host program, because the image of the host program is one that they're here to help people find things, direct people who are out of town, keep things, you know, kind of friendly. But in fact, you know, they patrol parking garages looking for people who are sitting around. I've seen them patrolling parking garages. They're not allowed to hand out maps of the city of Santa Cruz, because that belongs to the commercial business of the Santa Cruz Tourist Bureau over on Front Street. So it seems like
that's not a commercial business. That thing is supported by city tax dollars. And so,
but it is
no
a business.
There.
But there is the supervisor of the host program tells me there's a conflict. Tells me that they created a lot of trouble when they set up, because they were giving out maps and they had to refrain from giving out maps of the city.
That's simply untrue. The person's misinformed if they did tell you that.
That's the person who runs the program, Mike.
If he told you that, he's misinformed. The citizens, the CVC, the Convention and Visitors Center is funded primarily by the city of Santa Cruz, some additional county money, and it's not a for-profit business.
But
it's our money that's going out there. Why would we be concerned that somehow different people are giving out the maps we're paying for?
If you go into the host program and ask them for a map, and they will tell you, you either have to go to Woolworths and buy one, or you have to go to the Tourist Bureau. They're not allowed to hand out maps. The whole point of that host program was to put more eyes and ears on the street in order to move people along without creating the image of a police state. Now, that's almost a quote.
If you talk to the street people, you'll find that they think the hosts are being totally reasonable, that they get along with them reasonably well, and they're not the Gestapo that everybody predicted they might likely be.
No,
they're representation of what they do out there.
The fair representation is that 60% of what they do is move people along and deal with homeless people. They go through parking garages looking for people who are sitting in parking garages in wet weather. They're not there to help with directions. That's absolutely not true. And I can tell you that I talked to a number of merchants and a number of city council people who have absolutely no qualms about saying the whole point of the program was to put this on without doing, you know, the nasty face of police sweeps. This was a nice way of controlling it.
I don't believe a single city council member told you that.
Oh, really? All right. Well, you have a copy of
the thesis.
The
reason that we approved the host program was to, like, sweep people off the streets. Which city council member has that view?
Lou Rittenhouse.
Louis Rittenhouse will say anything to anybody about what... I don't know what his motives might be. Yeah, okay, take it back. Louis Rittenhouse may have thought that's why the program exists. I'll stipulate to that. I have no idea what motivates him.
Many merchants say the same thing, and the hosts themselves, that it's cheaper than a police force. Now, this was not an uncommon point of view. I understand that it's not yours, but I think that it's kind of naive for you not to see that as a viable possibility. That the resistance that you have to seeing that as at least one purpose of this, you know, have you been duped? You know, that's what it kind of looks like.
I go down and talk to people on the street who say that the hosts are uncommonly polite to them.
I'm sure they are very nice people. They're all nice people.
So this notion that they're somehow driving people away or that they're being abusive to people on the street.
I'm not saying abusive.
It's an outrageous misrepresentation of what they do.
I'm not saying they're being abusive, but they're social
control. And the fact of whether they do or don't give out maps, I don't know what's going on here, but the whole representation that somehow they're in competition with the private business of the CVC, which is not a private business, doesn't make a profit, and uses our money to give out maps.
You know, this is the kind of disingenuous strenuous argument that characterizes your representation on city council.
Disingenuous.
Well,
excuse me.
Be quiet a moment, and I'll tell you exactly how it's disingenuous. You're addressing points without ever addressing the issue. You're kind of going around and around things. I'm not talking about them being mean people or doing oppressive things, but you have, you know, it's like the Disneyland police. You have a nice face on this, but this is social control. And the whole point of it is social control. It's not tourist information. Let me finish with a couple of points that you had made about people, you know, general people not wanting to have homeless people around, that you're trying to do education and that these laws are sort of supporting this. We also live in a community where there are a lot of racist people. This is an incredibly racist town. And it's a very liberal town, and liberal racism has a certain face on it. It's not the kind of stuff that you find in the Deep South where people are right in your face with it. And that's the same kind of stuff that happens here on a class basis. Part of what's happening, you wouldn't, I believe this, and I might be wrong, but I would like to believe that you would not pass any kind of law that supported racist attitudes, that you would think seriously of how else these things could be addressed before you played into the hands of people who were overtly racist. And I think that that's exactly what happened with those ordinances, that you've played into the hands of people who have really classist attitudes. And to say that people are being classist is no more justification for allowing them to have their way than to say that this is a racist community. How could we possibly have affirmative action? That's just not fair. That's just not what I expect from somebody who declares himself a socialist democrat.
Well, the again, yes, I think Santa Cruz is, I don't think it's more racist than other places which people sometimes represent, but I think it shares certainly in the racism that exists in our society. And you're right, it's a more subtle form than the kind of blatant racism that you might get in some parts of the country or some particular communities. But, you know, there's no denying that that exists, or that there's classism that goes on that's, you know, which totally pervades our society and every aspect of our society. But the notion that somehow you look at a particular ordinance, the reason I wasn't after attacking Dan for his notion, you know, or that he had to move 10 feet was somehow like mocking his point of view. I'm just trying to say, if you look at what the laws actually do, what do the hosts actually do? How do they actually behave on the street? And what you're going to do is tell me we should ignore the actual things going on, and then you're...
You mean
let me
the
finish,
sweeps
let me
through
finish.
The garages? The sweeps through the parking
you.
Garages?
I didn't finish. That as, and I did let you finish your comments, that basically these folks, the people that are dealing with the hosts, in terms of the host behavior or the laws in terms of how they're enforced in downtown Santa Cruz, I'm saying look at what the laws actually do. Look how the hosts behave. Instead, what you would offer us is that you're going to tell me what my motives were in voting for that, or
that's
what the council majority's
true.
Motives were in passing these things, that we were attempting to create a security state, or that we're trying to drive people away, trying to have social, or you just
that's
said
not
this.
What I said.
Or
I
social,
didn't say any of
we're
this.
Trying to use them for social control in the downtown, rather than to actually deal with the issues of making the place comfortable and safe for people, trying to attract people there, and the question of whether they do or don't give out maps or directions or whatever, that somehow our motives were really to have a social control program, to use these folks because they're cheaper, and they're really basically police that are just trying to drive the homeless away or make them uncomfortable.
I didn't say drive them away. I did say social control. It's cheap social control.
Cheap social control. We'll stick with that for a moment. Cheap social control. I'm saying, let's look at the actual behavior. Are they, in fact, driving people out of downtown Santa Cruz, making them do things that are unreasonable, behave in particular ways that are placing restrictions on their behavior that are repressive, or are they simply trying to create a downtown that's comfortable for both homeless and other people down there, for anybody that wants to be down there? And I say, look at the behavior, talk to the homeless or the street people themselves, not even the homeless here, but the street people themselves, about the host program, and ask them, have these people been oppressive to you? Don't sort of say, well, look, you know through your social analysis, these people must be involved in social control, and you now know what my motives must be.
No.
That's a bad argument.
That's not even the argument that I was making. And this is the kind of thing that it's so hard to argue with you. It's so hard to talk with you about anything of import, because you have a way of picking and choosing the points that you want to hear. I'm not saying that this is an oppressive organization. I'm saying it's an organization that was developed as a form of social control, and it's being presented to the city of Santa Cruz under the guise of a tourist bureau. That it is not a tourist bureau. It was not created because people are having trouble getting from one end of Pacific Avenue to the other.
It was created for a range of reasons that include, let's use the word social control for a moment, to control unreasonable behavior in the downtown. Not
like
just
sitting in a parking garage.
if sitting in a parking garage and aggressive...
That's what they do.
Because we get reports regularly of people aggressively panhandling people in the parking garages because they're at the out of sight of law enforcement or the general public. Now, in the downtown, increasingly, in Santa Cruz, people have, since we passed these ordinances, people's behavior has been much more reasonable. We have a lot less aggressive panhandling. People that are doing panhandling are doing it in a reasonable way. They're not being stopped from doing it. What we're now getting is that some of the aggressive panhandling is shifting out into the parking lots, into the surface parking lots, particularly the parking garages. And so what we're trying to do now is use the hosts and others to go try and deal with that problem. Because, again, it's not because somebody's homeless that they're being targeted, but because people are involved in aggressive behavior that we don't think is appropriate, and they're not even being arrested for, which the host can't arrest anybody. They're going out and basically saying to people, we're watching what's going on here. If, in fact, you break the laws, we will call an officer to deal with you. Now, if that's social control, yes.
Yes,
that
it's
kind
a
of
friendly, watchful that, eye in
that
case
kind of,
you sit
exactly.
in the wrong place.
And that's, one of, and that's part of what it means. And that kind of social control I endorse heartily. I think, it's, you know, I'm not hiding from that. To make people behave in reasonable ways in public spaces, absolutely. And that's part of what the hosts do. They also do, in fact, give people directions. I don't, you know, they give people resources about what exists downtown. And nobody that I can see can honestly say that the way that people do the work that they do, this, quote, social control work, is, in fact, attempting to drive people away, which is what was represented.
Didn't say drive anybody away.
But that's because people keep making this representation that what we're trying to do is drive the homeless poor people to make them illegal, to make them seem that they're, you know, to create a social value that somehow that they don't belong down there.
You can stop on that point for hours, but that's not the point that I was making. Dan, you've been trying to get in.
Well, now you answer my question. If I had answers, answer my question. Is it wrong to have any social control? In other words, if people are involved in aggressive and nasty behavior, is it a form of social control that's inappropriate to have law enforcement and hosts and others try and interrupt and actually stop that kind
Before
of behavior?
Before she answers that question, which I hope she does, Dan has been kind of chomping at the bit here for a few minutes. Can you share your mic with
us? Also, I have to go, Robert. You did invite me from 10 to 12, and I'm not running away, but I want to say I do have to go because I have another meeting at noon, and so I want to thank you for inviting me. Uh-huh. Give Dan a chance to answer, and again, thanks for inviting me on the radio. I'll be happy
always
to come back sometime if you like.
This was Mayor Mike Rodkin, willing
thanks.
To return.
Sorry, I can't
thank
stay
you for coming in, for facing the firing
thank you,
line,
all
and
of
we'll be firing at you outside as well.
I'm sure. Thanks, and keep
right.
up the good work, everybody.
And we are trying to keep up the good work, hopefully by getting Mike Rodkin out of office, along with some of his questionable colleagues like Cynthia Matthews and Scott Kennedy, who have turned the city council majority, so-called progressives, into quite the opposite, day into night, and so forth. Well, come and be a part of the solution to this problem by joining me up at Kresge College on Monday, February 23rd, 8 o'clock, for the Rodkin-Norris debate. And then show up at City Council the next day. There is a City Council meeting on Tuesday night. That's coming up. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to examine the agenda, but it's a pretty sure bet that the folks trying to save the homeless garden from the clutches of the 5-2 majority that is crushing not just the garden, but the popular will around the garden by trying to circumvent the initiative that folks have put together to save the garden property, the Pelton Street property, they'll probably be at that City Council meeting. Probably in the evening, but if you're interested, go to the city clerk or to the library and check the agenda. And then come on down to the 3:30 or 7 o'clock sessions of City Council. Also meeting on Monday is the Citizens Police Review Board's Outreach Committee, which is kind of a joke, and I left them a message on their phone line to tell them so. The last time their Outreach Committee met was in June of 1997. So they aren't doing too much outreach. And where are they reaching out? In the beach flats, perhaps? Down on the mall? Out at the Homeless Community Resource Center, some other place where folks who are suffering police misconduct need to know. No, they are at their office. They're meeting at their little office at 915 Cedar Street. So that's happening at 5:30, in case you're interested, on Monday, tomorrow, February 22nd. What can we say about Mike Rodkin and the way he argues? Well, I would have to say that as I review these tapes, and I'm kind of listening to them for the first time with you since I heard them 2 years ago in the studio live, Mike throws out 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 arguments in the space of 30, 40 seconds. Again, all with the intention of kind of defending a basic position. Unfortunately, in this case, the position is morally wrong and usually factually wrong as well. And he has mustered all kinds of defensive arguments to cover himself. But the key position is what we must keep focusing on. as well as revealing the kinds of tactics he uses to defend his and to couch the issue. Because that's what's really going on. It's a form of deception. It's a form of misdirection. It's a next tactic is to throw out a series of reasonable arguments, reassure everyone that we're okay, we're no worse than this city, than that city, and so forth. Whereas if someone brings up the issue of the human right to sleep, he never confronts it. He never says, yes, human beings have a right to sleep at night. No, he says, we're better than most places. No place will allow you to camp anywhere and everywhere all over the streets. Of course, no one was talking about that. They were talking about the human right to sleep. But Mike doesn't want to deal with that issue, so he changes the terms of the discussion and starts talking about something else, an easier position to defend, and one that has really very little to do with what was being discussed before. It's a kind of a form of exaggerating an argument to make your opponent appear ridiculous and to more easily counter the argument your opponent has. This is the kind of thing you're going to be seeing at the debate on Monday night, I suspect, and we often see it at city council meetings where, in response to oral communication, in response to arguments from the folks coming up to the mic from the public, Mike takes about twice as long as his opponents have taken, and it's actually four times as long because Mike speaks twice as quickly, to run through a whole series of rapid arguments which don't have a lot to do with the substance of what is said, but attempt to reassure the listening public that his position is okay, folks there don't understand the facts, folks there are being unreasonable, that we are actually doing just the right thing. His arguments in the case of the Pelton Street property, for instance, that the city needs the money from requiring an immediate sale of this property. It needs the money, but doesn't mind giving developers more money than it's getting to sell the property. There's no specific clarity as to what the city needs the money for, but Mike is sure that the city needs the money. And it's not an argument that's really comes out of anywhere except Mike needs to defend the position that he has. Mike needs to defend his liberal credentials. Mike needs to counter the arguments of folks coming up to the mic with something, so Mike comes up with this one. Similarly, we will find this kind of argument around the sleeping ban. Oh, there's a magnet effect. The voters would never allow it. He'll be throwing these arguments out as fast as you can blink. Used to call this man Motormouth Mike Rotkin back in 1988 when he was encouraging Mayor Laird to arrest people at the mic. And he's still doing that. He's still demanding Celia Scott cut speakers off. It's a form of the arrogance of power. And there's also, I guess, a sensitivity that if you allow people to really speak their minds in a democratic forum, then it cuts into the power of the folks on his side of the podium. That's something he doesn't like to tolerate, and usually doesn't tolerate, particularly when the folks coming from our side of the mic are poor or homeless folks that he doesn't want to hear. You know, in honor of the final part of that conversation back in 1995, I guess it was, around December, where Mike was talking about he was defending social control and talking about how the hosts are just good-natured guides who tell people where to go, give them instructions, and deal with aggressive panhandling and other bad behavior, instead of being agents of social control that are designed to essentially repress forms of behavior the merchants don't like sitting down in certain places, like peacefully asking for spare change in a fashion that creates a less than attractive commercial image in the minds of some. Here's a song by Free Radio's own Phil Free, one of the founders of Free Radio Santa Cruz, called Hospitality Nazis. It's played without his permission, but hopefully not with too many objections.
When I'm walking down the streets, never know might meet. Town to town, you just never know. But in each town, things the same. Each town got a different name. Find them wherever the shoppers go. Yeah, hospitality patrol, here to make sure you wear a smile. Yeah, there's the hospitality Nazis, come shop with us for a while. They're here to make sure your shopping experience is enjoyable and keep the riffraff in line. The hall monitors of the Pacific Garden Mall obey the rules and you'll have a good time. Just obey the rules and you'll have a good time. Well, they got them cute little radios and pretty green shirts as well. They're the eyes and ears of the Santa Cruz police to protect and serve and sell. Yeah, they're the hospitality patrol, here to make sure you enjoy your stay. The green-shirted hospitality Nazis, if you ain't got the cash, you better go away. But they'll make sure your shopping experience is wonderful. They'll keep those dirty street people in line. The eyes and ears of the Santa Cruz police obey the rules and you'll have a good time. That our hosts have been pretty damn inhospitable, especially since the street is home to me. They come into my house, order me around with no badge and no authority. They're the hospitality patrol, here to make sure you wear a smile. They're the hospitality Nazis, and spend your money for a while. They'll make sure your shopping experience is freaking wonderful. Yeah, they'll keep us dirty street people in line. The hall monitors the Pacific Garden Mall. Obey the rules and you'll have a good time. Well, though you just may be passing through, remember what I sang to you. Your hometown, yes, everywhere, where there's money to spend, they are there. Look around, I'm sure you'll see our gentrified reality. Spend your money day by day, our hosts are here to guide the way. Yeah, they're the hospitality patrol, here to make sure you enjoy your stay. The green-shirted hospitality Nazis, if you ain't got the cash, you better go away. Yeah, they'll make sure your shopping experience is freaking wonderful. They'll keep us dirty street people in line. The hall monitors the Pacific Garden Mall. It's here in Santa Cruz. Just obey the rules and you'll have a good time. Obey the rules and you'll have a good time. We'll call the cops over and they'll beat on you for a while.
Because you know we're out here fighting.
Which they fear.
Coonerty says he has no concerns about Norse's threat of a boycott and says he's certain last night's incidents at his store and the ID building are related to the new panhandling laws the council, of which he is a member, approved Tuesday night.
Kim Argulo told me that the only thing they had left was bricks, and I know Robert Norse had made a speech between the breaks of during the council meeting in the late afternoon, out my store, and that I had authored the ordinances, and that Stewart across the street had one of the people arrested downtown, that was his building, and pointed that out to people as he walked around downtown.
North says he was simply showing street people the salient points of the history of the homeless struggle in Santa Cruz. The city council's new panhandling laws limit where and how people may ask for money and does not allow sitting or lying on sidewalks in the commercial districts. The council says it acted in response to complaints about aggressive panhandling on Pacific Avenue. Norse says it's an attempt to gentrify downtown at the expense of poor people's free speech rights.
This will keep an already unsavory social situation in the headlines for months, if not years, and will discourage shopping and investment. A downtown is more than buildings and street fixtures. It means retaining your shopping base, creating a civil environment, and maintaining retail continuity. Planning for a downtown means considering the interrelated ramifications of development decisions and avoiding planning failures like the West Side Longs and now our latest Trojan horse. The mall is now 41st Avenue, and downtown is now an area many feel has become socially repellent. How things change, all we can do is follow Supervisor Button's campaign literature advice and keep on marching right off the edge of a cliff. My name is Dan Garr, and that's the way I see it.
Good afternoon, Monterey Bay, 5:33 at AM 1080 KSCO. This is Michael Beatty with local and state news. Had a rock lobbed through its window last night around 12:30. The owner, Neil Coonerty, is a member of the city council, which Tuesday night voted in a series of laws limiting panhandling.
Community. I think there's some people that haven't gotten that point. And if they think that busting windows of downtown businesses are somehow going to teach them a lesson to drive them out of town, I don't think they're aware of what we've been through since the earthquake and that it's not going to affect us. I think it's really destructive, ridiculous behavior, but I guess it's what you have to put up with in order to cast a vote in the city council.
Norse is threatening a boycott of downtown merchants, but Coonerty says he's not concerned about any warnings issued by Norse.
Broken around midnight last night. The stores hit were the ID building and the bookshop Santa Cruz. The owner of the ID building has been in confrontations in the past with homeless activists, and the owner of the bookshop is a member of the city council, which Tuesday night voted in a series of laws limiting panhandling activities downtown. Homeless activist Robert Norse denies lobbing the rocks, but says he understands the frustrations of street people in Santa Cruz who see a change coming to what Coonerty has described as the city's living room, that is Pacific Avenue.
It's a situation where the people who are instigating these problems, who are insisting on turning Santa Cruz into a Carmel South, are essentially then hysterically blaming those who simply want to maintain the traditional ambiance and tolerance in the town and make sure that it's not illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night for homeless people somewhere. And I'm not talking about downtown. I'm talking about on the edge of town somewhere where it might be legal for somebody to lay down their sleeping bag or go to sleep in their van.
The new ordinances outlaw, among other things, sitting or lying on the sidewalks. Coonerty spoke to Norse this afternoon, asking him about the incidents last night, and Coonerty says he received threats of violence from another homeless activist Tuesday night. Coonerty says Kim Argula told him the street people only have rocks left. Meanwhile, Coonerty has decided to take action against Norse.
He's no longer welcome in the store, and he's... Nobody follows him. I mean, the homeless are want to keep a long arm's length from him. He doesn't help them. He's got no credibility. My feeling is that he's probably the stupidest political activist on the face of the earth, so I've got no problem with what he does.
Norse is threatening a boycott of downtown stores.
Went around last night. They broke the windows of the ID company downstairs. or down in Santa Cruz. How about Bookshop Santa Cruz? Both stores had their windows broken. Only because we want to clean out the human debris. We want to take care of some of the problems in the family living room, in the community living room. But what happens? They just come in and maraud us. The gunfire goes on. The battle goes on. You know those liberals. They're just so tolerant. They don't get their way. They break windows. They invade private property. They don't buy any grapes. We need to vacuum the living room. We need that tank. That Frank Jordan sent over to Golden Gate Park and swept out the homeless, the illegal homeless encampment. All right, glad you could join us tonight. Holy Toledo, don't forget, in just about a half a minute, we need to take a 10-second break for the Sounds of Silence to comply with FCC rules. We'll do a...
automatically worse. Yes, on the illegal alien exchange program, I think we can start with Mr. Scott Kennedy. He can be deported.
Ooh, I like that.
In return for the illegal alien...
Scott, be gone.
That's right. In other words, Scott, show some compassion. Sacrifice a little. Number three, as for Bookshop Living Cruise... if Neil Kennedy feels so strongly about letting a homeless have somewhere to sleep, can't he open the door to his bookshop all night?
Well, I don't think he's, he feels strongly. I think the city council, especially Mr. Rotkin, takes a position that they provide a number of services, including sleeping facilities to the homeless. And so they don't want or feel or believe that people ought to be sleeping in downtown Santa Cruz or, frankly, anywhere else in public arena.
I agree. The thing is, though, I hear a number of these homeless advocates saying that, and for a while, Kennedy and some of the others have been on their side. It's nice to see them finally starting to come back to reality.
Well, I think it was more Kennedy and Rotkin. I don't know that Mr. Coonerty's always been a real homeless advocate.
I take it back on what I've said on him. But, you know,
he's a compassionate man, but he also understands people like Robert Norris and some of the other activists are just that. They're doing their Andy Warhol 15 minutes of fame, and they just keep beating it to death.
That's right. And I want to applaud Mr. Coonerty for what he said in the news when you released today. When I was driving down listening to KSCR, I thought, oh, thank heavens, he said what he said. It's about time, you know, the shop owners in Santa Cruz said, go ahead and boycott us, because the people who are going to be buying there are going to buy there anyway.
Let's give him a community applause here.
That's
for listening,
right.
And we're glad you talked to Jim. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the Daily Rail.
Yeah, good evening, Dave. Listen, on this whole deal about downtown, I think that there's some things that we're forgetting. You know, when you're dealing with these folks, you got to keep your eye on the big picture.
Okay.
And not get bogged down. I was just reviewing my tapes of the city council meeting of second Tuesday in November when Mr. Scott Kennedy assumed the office of mayor. And one of the statements that he made in reviewing the Progressive's year last year was that a statement he made that by the end of December, a police review board would be in place. I presumed he was talking about 1993. That was the plans at that time. However, you haven't heard much talk recently.
Well, I think it's on the agenda next.
It sure is. That's why I'm calling you. It is on the agenda, and it hasn't gone away. And if you would have listened to Mrs. Byers the other night make the statement that she was going to vote for this package of Get Tough on the Bums somewhat reluctantly. She felt that they had gone way too far. And
she's the one that wanted to give them blue blazers and make them docents downtown.
Yes. So it's what you have in mind.
The village idiot, Catherine Byers, and unfortunately she's going to be mayor next year.
Yes. Can you imagine if you...
So
if
we'll remain in the headlines nationwide in Santa Cruz, thanks to Catherine Byers and some of the other goofballs.
The ridiculousness that we've seen so far is just stick around. main event's coming up, but anyway...
I respect Kennedy and Coonerty and those folks that at least had the guts to throw people out of the meetings who were disruptive. Now, Catherine Byers, I'm sure, is going to be stormed by the troopers every Tuesday.
That would never happen. She would never...
She'll probably invite them to her home.
It is what I call my main thing is that I believe is, you know, they've thrown the bone now to try and quell the merchants downtown. They had to do something. They're on their back. Those people downtown trying to make a living, you know, and is to the extent that if these things work, I'm all for it. Anything that can be done down there to help those working people. Myself, I think it's just a stall tactic. I don't know that you got an example with these broken windows of. What do you think is going to happen when they tie the police department's hands now with that police review? What good are these ordinances going to do? You're going to see a cop downtown Santa Cruz scared to death. These kooks will be down there, you know. I mean, the ACLU the other night said as much as so that they, you know, this thing will be tested. And they'll, in a couple of weeks, put in this police review. And these ordinances will be as good as, you know, nothing.
Of course, actually, what you do see is
the people who created the Police Review Board and the Police Review Board are thick as thieves with the police and never criticize them even when they shoot dead people with nothing in their hands and then later claim that there was a gun in their hands, as in the case of Happy John Dime. Well, anyway, I just thought I'd play you a few clips from 1994. These were clips from radio station KSCO, news clips, kind of running you by some of the past history of the downtown ordinances. I'm still banned from the bookshop Santa Cruz. In fact, the ban has been expanded so that if I go into Georgiana's Cafe, the cafe next to the bookshop Santa Cruz, I will be trailed and pursued by the inevitable Neil Coonerty with police in tow. So I no doubt going to have to challenge that at some point, maybe plan a large theatrical event with a sleeping bag and a bunch of folks, and we can sort of hang out at Georgiana's and point out that freedom of assembly is another right that's being denied to homeless people. You cannot sleep at night alone or in a group. You obviously can't assemble at night in that sense either. And so it's another example of denial of basic constitutional right under the excuse of some sort of public health and safety problem. And of course, the real health and safety that's being destroyed is the health and safety of homeless people who are being turned into non-people, as other groups have traditionally in history: gypsies, Jews, foreigners, minority groups of all sorts in different countries. It's happening here, too. The earlier musical selection you heard was musician Phil Free singing Hospitality Nazis. Phil recently had a visit from the hospitality squad as he was playing in front of Cottontails. Apparently Cottontails didn't like the kind of music he was playing, although when I walked inside the store myself, I found I couldn't even hear him. I couldn't make out the words he was singing. He's a pretty lusty singer, but there was layers of concrete and glass between him and the hosts or hospitality squad have taken recently to presenting a somewhat garbled version of the Downtown Performers Guidelines. Not sure how many of you know what these are. These are sort of a voluntary set of guidelines kind of hammered out by folks in the early 80s when a even more conservative city council was gunning to pass street regulations about for performers, which they didn't do because folks like Tom Noddy, Jan Luby, and even Tom Scribner, the musical saw player whose statue now graces area right in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz and the former hotel, Hotel St. George, where Tom used to live. Folks like this got together, then kind of arranged to put forward some street performer guidelines, and those were sort of a voluntary agreements which performers could follow if they wanted. It was completely consensual and completely non-binding, but sort of suggested for both the merchants and the performers that if after an hour, if they were asked to move along, they would play just for an hour longer, and then they would move. Theory being that the merchant could take it for an hour, and the performer could find another space after an hour. Again, nothing was set in stone, nothing was set down as a legal code, but it was decided upon as a kind of an understandable compromise that would be used. Unfortunately, it didn't really work out too well that way. Instead, it became a sort of a series of rules that merchants and their agents, the hosts, kind of hide behind and try to throw out at performers, say, you can't do this, you can't do that, you've got to move on after an hour. It's not really true. A person could stand all day playing in the same spot, provided they're not blocking traffic or creating a disturbance. And so, in fact, police have used disturbing the peace laws to go after performers like Phil Free, like Skidmark Bob. Or is it Skidmarks Bob? This has always been a real question of mine. But anyway, that's what happened last week. I came on the scene, and the hosts and police were conveying the opinion of Cottontail that unless these nasty musicians moved on, they would be getting disturbing the peace tickets. Phil Free, however, is not a man to be easily moved, and he was not. And I'm glad to say he didn't get a ticket. That, and after a cluster of police and hosts kind of conferred, they gave up on it. And Phil, of course, sang more lustily and more loudly than ever, informing everybody in the area what was happening. So actually, it was quite a edifying thing. It's like when police begin to confront someone, the best thing to do is to draw a crowd by telling people in a loud voice just what's going on. You don't have to be abusive or nasty, just be clear about what's happening. That's a sort of a form of cop watch and cop monitoring, which is really important since we don't really have a Citizen Police Review Board, in spite of the concerns of conservatives, as you heard on radio station KSCO, the little bits we replayed for you. We have a group of city council appointed weenies who don't really want to do anything to offend the police chief, and they don't. And it's a real sad thing because they have a constituency here that could back them up if they were willing to take the necessary moves to actually hold the police accountable for misconduct, which actually strengthens the police force, because then you have a police force where the bad apples don't get to run the show and just embarrass everybody else because of a blue coat of silence, because everybody else feels like they're a snitch. It's kind of ironic. It's okay to snitch on the rest of the community, but not on your fellow. Let's return now to the December 22nd, 1995 show, which you may remember had Mike Rotkin debating the sleeping ban and the downtown ordinances and the hosts. Let's hear a little bit from Dan Hopkins. Dan was one of the leaders of the campground organization Save Our Shelter. He was co-founder of the City Hall Sleepers protest. The other co-founder, Sean Alini, is currently in jail fighting charges, trying to get out. He's quite a target for police in this town, even though I've never received any reliable information that he's done anything illegal of any significant nature. But he spent literally months and months in jail awaiting trial on bogus drug charges. That happened in 1996. And sleeping charges, that also happened in 1996. Anyway, let's get back to this Rotkin aftermath. The mayor himself, council member, has left the studio, but the discussion goes on.
Discrimination according to these ordinances, I have documentation that I've taken down myself with times, dates, and everything throughout the last month here. And one of the things is why is it that people that look real good can block the sidewalk with their equipment, their horns, their A-frame signs, and has a downtown association name on it? They block the entire sidewalk, play five loud horns, and nobody got a ticket. Also, a Salvation Army man was sitting on the sidewalk screaming at the top of his lungs Christian songs with his pot within 10 feet. All this, by the way, was within 10 feet of a business and was blocking the sidewalk. Also, another person was at the federal building, at the post office, federal ground, also collecting money with his pot. And he wasn't singing, but he was getting his money in a public place. And then, why is it that on Hippie Corner, why is it on Hippie Corner that the hosts will come down and the policemen and will tell them to clear the aisle path so people can get through when there's people congregating or hugging or whatever they're doing there? And why is it that they make them clear, but then right up the street where the theater is, where I've heard many people have complained about people standing in front of their business, the sidewalk is entirely crowded for hours sometimes, and you cannot walk down that street. You have to walk into the street and around these people in order to get down. But no one says anything to them, and they have it entirely. And as a matter of fact, they even have a little line there where people can block the whole sidewalk.
Mike, when you answer that question, can you also say that are you concerned about discriminatory enforcement, and how should people proceed if you do have a particular interest in seeing that ceases?
I wouldn't represent that any laws in the city of Santa Cruz or anywhere else in this country are not enforced with certain kinds of unfairness. And the situation, if people are, I'm sure that you'll see homeless people or street people who are violating the law, and I get complaints all the time from citizens that or others that live in town that somehow that we're not adequately enforcing the existing laws that we have passed. And the reverse is equally as true, that there are people out there, I'm sure, for the Salvation Army that are someplace they don't need to be. And I would say when people see people breaking law, or anybody, whether they're street people or Salvation Army folks or other representatives, any different kind of person in Santa Cruz, they should complain to one of the hosts or one of the police officers that the person's in some way violating one of the laws, and those people will enforce it. So I'd like to see those laws enforced.
Can they complain to you, Mike?
They can complain to me, which I'm sure they'll do. I get complaints, it's clear to me about 10 or 12 times as many complaints from folks who call and say, like, you know, that we're not enforcing our ordinances, that there are people blocking the sidewalk, and they're talking about street people.
Mayor Byers had office hours on the sidewalk. Are you intending to do something similar?
She had him in the host office,
right,
which I'm intending to do that starting next year, too, as well, sure. I'll be doing that regularly, as well as I already have him in my office downtown and up on UCS here on campus. So I'm sorry, I do have to run. I'm not trying to, like, duck out, as you know. I'm always happy to come back and talk again. But
Mike
I do
likes
have
to talk, just like I do.
So thanks for inviting me, Robert. I'll see you later.
Thank you, Mayor Mike Rutkin. You are, of course, listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. I'm sorry we didn't hear from as many of you as we wanted. The next show hosts have not come in, so we're going to usurp the time and discuss the issues that I think are still dangling in the wind after the mayor has left. And I have a very lucid, incisive analyst here who I'm sure is going to give some interesting perspectives on this. And I'm referring to none other than Celine Pascal here. I want to point out that we had hoped to get some kind of a commitment from Mike that he was going to do something significant on January 1st to deal at least with the situation of the people he has deported, let us say, conveniently relocated to a comfortable campground, the New Brighton Beach campers. And his answer was, no, he didn't have any plans, but okay, he won't leave them stranded out there. That's nice. Maybe they'll bus them back into town. That's a possibility. And I guess that might be reassuring to Capitola News merchants and perhaps some news media people and certain other conservative board of supervisor people. It doesn't reassure me. I'm concerned about the fate of those people, but I'm also concerned about the fate of hundreds of their brothers and sisters who are outside who didn't have the good fortune or the tenacity or didn't have it together enough, but who still have to sleep outdoors, who still are in a position of being outside illegally late at night, and who are still facing harassment downtown during the day. Now, I continue to rag on this issue and will continue to rag on this issue, I believe, in the weeks and months and perhaps years ahead. What we have are days ahead until Christmas. Days. Today is December 22nd. December 25th is Christmas. We're lucky enough to have some media attention on the plight of the New Brighton Beach campers. And indeed, there is some public response. People are coming out and helping those campers, giving them goods, giving them firewood. Media is actually perhaps beginning to explore the situation, though it's really hard to get media to acknowledge that there was a deal made by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, that it was broken. We couldn't seem to get Mike to pay much attention to that. His only response was to talk around it and dismiss it. Well, it doesn't matter if a deal was made, he said. The city council has to agree. Well, it doesn't matter if the city council hasn't agreed and has permitted it for the last few months. It's up to the Citizens Committee. In other words, he keeps bouncing it back. He's a master at fencing off these issues, at not addressing these issues, and which would be fine if we were playing some kind of intellectual ping pong up in one of his university classes. And perhaps for us here in the studio, in a way, it is intellectual ping pong. But for a great number of people outside, it's cold and it's wet, and there are cops roaming the streets, and there are probably some troll busters too. So it's not intellectual in the least. And that's what makes it so vicious and so demoralizing to hear the kind of dialogue that I've heard for the last 2 hours. You know, Mike and I can play Mr. Nice Guy to each other, and we do, and no doubt we will continue to. But what's going on here is not nice. It's not nice at all, and perhaps it cannot be dealt with by being nice back. Celine here is one of the nicer people I know. When she tries to get in a point, it gets demolished in a fog barrage of rhetoric, which, you know, completely dissipates the point. It's hard to get a straight issue from politicians who are masters at rhetoric, who are masters at talking around issues. Now, Mike prides himself on being somewhat straightforward. He came out to the campground and he said, we're going to call the cops, you know. And that was straightforward. And the consequence of that straightforward behavior was it provoked such despair and such concern and such anxiety that campers abandoned their rights. And they promised, I understand, that some of them promised Paul Meursault that they would not come back to that campground if they were given this opportunity to have their dogs avoid being killed or abandoned by their being forced to go into the armory to be legal. Well, that's an agreement under duress, folks. I got to tell you campers that. And I got to tell the community that. If somebody threatens you with jail and threatens you with injury to yourself and others, and then you make a deal to eliminate a prior deal that has been made to help them get out of the contract that they welched on, you don't have to live up to that. You don't have to do that. I mean, certainly a matter of personal choice. Any one of those New Brighton Beach campers can do what she or he wants to do. But the truth is, in my opinion, they're under no obligation not to return to the open-air shelter tomorrow, or on January 1st, or on January 2nd, or thereafter. And I think, in solidarity with the hundreds of homeless people downtown who have no place to sleep, they might consider doing just that. Not that it's a wonderful place. It isn't. It's a wet, boggy area. But it can be made habitable. They made it habitable before. It is a possible habitable situation. And right now, as far as I know, it's the only place that is near the social services. Now, conceivably, there are other places people could take. I mean, I've recommended a Camp Quest campaign downtown. People looking for other pieces of property. Go to the Pogonip. Check out Harvey West. Let's try camping in different areas, here, there, and everywhere else, including, Jane Immler, the activist who's been mentioned earlier in the show, who helped start homeless services in Santa Cruz, has suggested Daryl Darling's house or Paul Lee's house or the houses of the people who are on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. And critics of mine have suggested my house. I don't have a house. I have a room. You could try it. It's not going to have much room over there, and the roof leaks, but that's okay. The fact is, people got to do something, because the holiday season is really the point of maximum pressure for protesters. If you're going to get some action done, now is the time to do it. Now is when the media is interested. Now is when people feel most deeply, partially because of their... Some of them are Christians, partially because it's the Christmas spirit and it's part of the conditioning that we all are brought up under. The need to address these issues. They're most sensitive to them. Now, I address these issues all the time. I'm happy to protest in season and out of season when I think it's going to be effective, and sometimes when I think it isn't, just to make the point so that the issue will get to the public. But who knows? I mean, I'd like to see sleepouts. I'd like to see a sleepout on Christmas Eve somewhere dramatizing this issue. I'd like to see support for such a sleepout. In fact, if anybody does want to support such a sleepout, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Because what we see is the mayor isn't going to do anything. Or if he is, he's not going to tell us about it. This liberal mayor, Mike Rodkin, this socialist, this so-called socialist radical mayor, is nothing of the kind. He's been passing the buck on us, and he's been supporting his friends on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and his friends on the city council, which in this case includes Scott Kennedy, who doesn't favor an open-air shelter in the winter, at least not at Coral Street. Well, rather than blather on, I'd like to have Celine, who looks like she's getting up to vacate the premises, maybe to stretch. Celine, you were getting up to stretch? What were you doing over there?
I was getting up to leave.
Oh, okay.
I was going to let Dan come sit in here and talk a little bit.
Well, Dan can talk a little bit. Dan has been on the last five shows, and you haven't been in here much, so
uh-huh.
Why don't you talk a little bit?
I'm not quite sure what to say after this experience. You know, it's so frustrating to talk to Mike Rodkin because, you know, he twists things in a way that makes it impossible to have a coherent conversation. There isn't, you know, I would much rather sit down and talk to Lou Rittenhouse because
Lou Rittenhouse, for our readers' information, was the conservative on the city council before the current Mary Beth Campbell came in.
He makes no bones about being a conservative. He comes straight from where he is, whereas Mike Rodkin likes to put a spin on things that, you know, so that he has this image of being a progressive when, in fact, he's doing things that are anything but.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz with Celine and Robert.
Hi, Robert. This is John Stewart. I want to compliment. Is that Flame who was talking with Mike Rodkin?
That was Celine.
Who?
Celine Pascal.
Is she gone? Is
no,
she?
She's
I'm here.
Oh, okay. I really appreciate your trying to pin Mike Rodkin down. He's like, it's like he never addressed any of your points. You know, as you pointed out to him, he's one of the slimiest, mealy-mouthed persons I've ever listened to in my life. In any event, you did as well as it could possibly be done with somebody so slimy.
Thank you.
And I appreciate you being on. And keep on keeping on. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you very much.
You know, Celine, I think that maybe I could play Mike Rodkin. I mean, we did this role-playing before in as a sort of a preparation for this show. I am really coming to the opinion the only way to talk to these people is to shout at them and to interrupt them in the middle of their latest devious bullshit retreat on an issue and demand and repeat the same issue. I found that works with Kennedy to some extent. When I was presenting the issue intensely, Mike claimed, for example, the meeting he had with the campers 2 days before they were finally evicted, in which they begged on their knees to be able to stay for 2 weeks at the campground. He claimed that the meeting broke up because the campers didn't like us disagreeing with this coerced deal that was made
Actually, it broke up because Scott Kennedy didn't like what I was saying about the deal being coerced. He just got up, and then Mike Rotkin got up, and they left. And then the campers all begged them to come back, suggesting that they saying, well, we don't want to listen to Robert Norris. And then, of course, this is well manipulated. I was being blamed because they were leaving. In fact, they've done this number before. They've blamed me. And Sherry Connable was also blamed. Sherry had the courage to speak up and remind people of the deal that the Citizens Committee had made, and also to remind them that Mike Rotkin was under no obligation to close the campground. It wasn't mandated by city law to close the campground. It was his decision, just like it's his decision to make it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night.
Well, in fairness to the campers, though, when people are in a really vulnerable situation and being coerced, you know, I don't know how many people would have acted differently. We have different expectations, different hopes. We wish that, you know, it would have been more evident that they were being manipulated, that they were being trapped into making this move. But the fact is that, you know, we don't have the same things at stake. So that they made this decision, you know, is just something that we need to help and support them and provide more options so that they don't have to be so much out there like that on their own as they were that time. In terms of confronting Mike, you're absolutely right. I watched the dynamics, and the only way to make, it's kind of like a dog that you have to kind of scream at or something. You know, like to get his attention, you sort of have to yell, and you have to interrupt, you have to be rude. I'm not sure I'm willing to do that, because the way that I talk and the things that I talk about, that represents me, who I am, what my values are. I don't think that in the long run, compromising who I am and what my values are in order to make a point with Mike Rotkin is worth it. I don't believe that any point that I make with Mike Rotkin, whether I got through to him by yelling and screaming or, you know, by being nice, I don't see that that's going to be a place of great social change. I'm not looking at Mike as a leader for us in this day and age. So what we really need to do is create our own leadership. And in doing that, I think it's really important to maintain our own sense of priorities, our own sense of integrity and values, and to put that forward in whatever interaction that we encounter. Now, the fact that Mike didn't address my points, the fact that he overtalked my points, you know, that has everything to do with him, and it doesn't have anything to do with me or the points that I make or the things that I value. And when I go home tonight, I'm going to talk to other people. We're going to move in a positive direction. In that movement, I don't imagine Mike's going to be there, and that's okay. You know, I didn't think that was going to happen. It's just fine. There's enough of us without Mike to do that. Thanks a lot for the show. Thanks a lot for your invitation, Robert. I really appreciate the good work you're doing. Hats off to all the folks out there who are hanging in with it.
Is there anything that you wanted to conclude with that was on your list that didn't quite get said, that you think our audience might be interested in knowing, points you were going to make, but that you didn't have a chance to? Because it looks like you did do a lot of writing there.
Yeah, there are a lot of points, and I see somebody here waiting to sit down.
They're not waiting. We have half an hour.
Oh, we have half an hour.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Ah, well, half an hour and an open mic. Here we go. That when we had the earthquake, the city did a study, and there were 1,910 people found to be homeless. Based on that...
Undercount.
Way undercount. Right. Based on that and the fact that there were all these other kinds of structural problems, the city declared a state of emergency. Mm-hmm. And as a result, got state and federal aid to deal with it. Mm-hmm. There are now 3,000 homeless people in the county, and I would like to see our local government begin to pressure state and federal agencies by declaring a state of emergency. This isn't a local problem. We hear that all the time. It's not a local problem. This is a national problem. Well, then it should be dealt with on a national level. In the 1930s, when people were out of work, they had residency requirements wherever you went because they were so afraid of the transient homeless person. And it wasn't until city governments united and said, hey, we can't cope anymore. We're going to kick this back up to the federal government because, you know, the charities tried to cope with it, and then the charities burned out. They were overwhelmed. Then the cities tried to cope with it. And it wasn't until the local government took the leadership and said, hey, this sucks. We're going back to the federal government. We want more out of this, that things began to change.
But Celine, Mayor Mike has said that he's going to lots of government meetings.
Well, Mayor Mike is doing the bureaucratic thing. Mayor Mike is not doing anything radical, and that's what we're really talking about, is a radicalized vision for our city government, where the local city officials can say,
we're not going to be pitted against our local residents anymore. The federal government, the corporations have us set up so that we're at odds all the time. We're not going to do that. We're going to join the people, and we're going to Washington. We're not going to take it anymore.
Well, I would imagine that our current city government is about as likely to do that as it is to, shall we say, provide justice for the homeless in Santa Cruz in the next 2 weeks. In other words, chances are, I'd say, 0 to -2%. What can we as citizens do?
When the people lead, the leaders will follow. Isn't that the expression?
How can we lead? How can we lead, Celine? What do you think should be done?
I think what we need is a grassroots movement, an organization that's broadly based and inclusive. That it isn't going to be the problems that we have around homelessness have very immediate needs. And I'm sorry, I can't say tonight, here's an open door, here's a place to stay. Yeah. What I can say is that homeless people united with people of color, reunited with gays and lesbians, united in a movement of the proletariat, of the worker, of the poor person, has the power, has the ability, as we see the connections, that we're all suffering. These are all different expressions of the same kind of oppression. These are all different faces of capitalism that exploits the other. The need for the working pool, the excess workers, the need for cheap labor, the need for high profits, all of those things get tied together. And because we see them as separate expressions, we often fail to see the need to unite among one another. And I believe that we can do that if we can start, and this radio show is a really good way of doing that, getting communication out, having regular meetings, getting some plan of action. What we're really talking about is an action-based coalition that's going to pressure, and it's going to take a lot of visible pressure on local government to make change.
So you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. That's Celine Pascal, who's written her PhD thesis on... Master's thesis on...
The Public Response to Homelessness.
1989 through 1994. And Celine, in the course of this thesis, you interviewed lots of people, right? Including city council people. And did you find out anything interesting that hasn't yet come out on the air that you might want to bring forward here?
Well, most of the people that I know on the street are a lot more savvy and a lot more upfront than the people in government. So I don't think there's going to be a lot that I found through this research that's going to surprise anybody that's out there. But what I think I did do through this research is to create a body of evidence that can be used to persuade people who aren't as savvy to the fact that the only thing that disturbs city government to the extent where we get action, a fast action, is disobedience, is
protest?
Upheaval, protest.
But that would
indeed
only offend the merchants. They're our allies, right? That's what I'm told by certain of my co-activists. We don't want to offend those merchants, right?
Well, you know, there has never been a time in history where need created a sense of entitlement, where need created a social response. Our government, unfortunately, has only responded to social protest and not to social needs. You know, I'm kind of tired of seeing people pitied but not entitled. I don't think that's right. That's not the way that... there goes the phone.
Go ahead. Finish your
sentence. That's not the society I want to be part of. I'm very fond of saying that 20% of the people who are homeless are people who are choosing to be homeless, that 80% of people are on the street by some misfortune and given an opportunity they'd be off of it tomorrow, and that 20% of it's a lifestyle choice. But it doesn't seem to occur to him or to others what it means to live in one of the wealthiest countries in the nation and to have so many people making this choice of lifestyle. I think that's a really intimidating question for anybody who participates in this society.
Well, they're just a bunch of young punks, right?
Well, you know, it's possible if the environment weren't so co-opted that something in between might have been able to develop. But with the city permits, and every time you turn around, the city's going to charge you money for anything you do. I mean, they make it prohibitive. And then with the laws, there's no in between. Like the open air shelter was kind of moving in that direction of people who could work and not have the high overhead of paying the high rent. And so there's no middle ground as far as the government's concerned. You have to either be part of the huge economy, That's why I kept saying it's a national issue, because it's a national economy. The McDonald's economy is the only economy. That's the underlying attitude.
Are you a camper yourself? You live outside?
No, I'm a grasshopper with a kind of a small burrow. I think you're kind of the same way.
Uh-huh.
You kind of have sympathy. If it were more of an open atmosphere, you might in fact decide to live outdoors, right?
It's possible, though.
Right? Yeah. I mean, you have sympathies in that direction. Maybe when you were younger, you did that.
I've been homeless, but it wasn't by choice at that
never,
time.
Never, but did you enjoy it at all? I mean, were there things about it that were kind of fun?
Well, I've seen people enjoying themselves who move about, and I definitely understand that. My situation, now, I was on the streets, and I was pretty miserable.
Yeah, all right. But, being in touch with nature is a nice thing sometimes.
Oh, I agree. Sure.
And that's another thing. There's a really anti-nature attitude where you got to have that roof and that insulation and the central heating, and when you go outside, it's just to go to your job or go to the store and then come home again.
Right.
And we've lost touch with nature, and that's another thing the open air shelter was doing. The people were more. I think we need people who are in tune with nature.
Well, what do you think about the idea of reopening the open air shelter once? Well,
I don't see why they don't have a few of them.
Well, no, I don't mean what they aren't going to do anything. They're going to try to stop us from that. But it seems to me that there was a large amount of community support for keeping that open-air shelter open, and it was closed as a quick deal because the people who operated the shelter were able to secure city council muscle behind him, and they just closed it as a kind of a fiat.
Did anyone spread straw down there?
Oh, yeah, some of it was spread down there. I mean, it wasn't spread enough. If we'd had... You know, if they'd spent, a fraction of the money they're spending on busing people out to New Brighton Beach on improving the campground, you'd have an area that 150 to 200 people could actually continue to live in.
A little erosion control and a little sewage control and
opening up the bathrooms next door at night from the Homeless Community Resource Center,
I hired a guy who had the message phone, and he was able to meet me. So that was a good deal. But I can't understand them. But when you say, I remember she said that, well, you're a socialist. Well, socialism is about social control. That's what it's about.
Well, there are some who would dispute that with you, but that's an issue I don't want to take up in this particular show.
Okay, but I'm just saying, I'm not surprised that someone who calls himself a socialist thinks everyone ought to get in line.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Well, here we are 2 years later. Mike Rutkin is still... potent force on the city council, but it begins to look like people are beginning to wake up. SCAN steering committee is taking a real close second look at city council members. SCAN is the organization that kind of elected them in the first place, and then they all, turned into little developers' toy poodles somewhere along the line, pro-police folks, and they seem to want to start regulating people all around town. From sitting, standing, or lying, close off the levee, curfew along the river, and so forth, and sell off the homeless garden project, all kinds of things that, some folks are beginning to wake up and say, hey, these aren't the people we elected, these aren't the people who said what they were going to say, said what they said, supposedly were going to do what they were going to do, and then we're stuck with this. So maybe the times are changing, and I'm hoping that different currents of our political community could get together and sweep some of these folks out. Of course, what we really need is a change that's far deeper than merely a change of faces in the political lineup. But it certainly would be nice to see some of the grim old clowns who are running the town run out of town, or at least run out of power. That's more what I'm thinking. I don't think anybody should run out of town, but I certainly think Mike Rutkin and his little clique on the council should be sent home. And then maybe other people will be able to find some homes, or at least find a place to sleep. You've been listening to Bathrop Spears' Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor in Santa Cruz, as I tell you every week, and sometimes twice a week. The show will return on Thursday at 6 o'clock. And if you want to hear me talking to Mike in a public way, that's happening on Monday, February 23rd. At Kresge College up at UCSC at 8 o'clock. Come on up at 8 o'clock. So bring along old tomatoes and sharpen up your aim.
and join us. I want to thank you for being with us. And if you don't make it up to the debate, come on back here Thursday, 6 o'clock. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
There once was a union maid who never was afraid of goons and geeks and the company pigs and the deputy sheriffs who made the raids. She went to the union hall when a meeting it was called, and when the company boys came round, she always stood her ground. Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union, I'm sticking to the union, I'm sticking to the union. Tricks of company spies. She never got fooled by company stools. She always organized. She'd always get her way when she struck for higher pay. She'd show her card to the National Guard, and this is what she'd say. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union till the day I die. You women who want to be free, take a little tip from me. Break out of that mold we've all been sold. You've got a fighting history. The fight for women's rights. If workers must unite, like Mother Jones, move those bones to the front in every fight. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union.